I'm speaking today with Alice Korngold, who is the President and CEO at Korngold Consulting. She is a consultant with corporations and nonprofits focusing on boards and CSR, and she blogs, or she writes for Fast Company and has a long time of experience working in both of these sectors. So I'm really excited to be speaking with you, Alice. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Olivia. Thank you so much for having me. I'm an avid reader of your blog, so very happy to be with you today.
Well, thank you, and likewise. It's great to finally speak with someone who I've been following online for so long. So, Alice, first of all, can you tell me how you got into this line of work? Before you were doing consulting for Korngold Consulting, you spent 10 or 12 years running a business volunteers, a company called Business Volunteers Unlimited, which, as I understood it, matched for-profit employees with nonprofit boards to help the nonprofit boards and help develop leadership skills with the employees who are serving on the board.
Exactly. How I got involved. I have, before I founded and built Business Volunteers Unlimited, I had built and run a couple of nonprofit enterprises, and it became very apparent, as it, I'm sure it is to anyone who's listening who's built nonprofits, that as the CEO is the head of a nonprofit, you learn very quickly that the board of directors and an effective board and effective board leadership is vital to the success of your organization. And in the early 90s, my husband and I had moved from New York City to Cleveland, Ohio, and leaders in the corporate community approached me. These were the heads of TRW, Jones Day, Eaton, BP, and KeyBank had approached me and knew of my background, and they said, you know, we're very philanthropic as corporations, but there must be ways that our companies can help nonprofits in other ways. And as a social entrepreneur, we'd love you to help us create an organization that will help strengthen nonprofits. And I went out and interviewed actually 128 heads of nonprofits and board chairs and funders. And I said, what are the most serious challenges facing your organizations and how could we be most helpful? And they said, our most serious challenges are strategic and financial, and where we most need help is at the board level. And what I realize is that companies have tremendous talent and their interest is very much in leadership development, and nonprofits with strategic and financial challenges, and what they were saying to me is where they need help is at the board level, that there was a tremendous opportunity in terms of creating a very high-quality, high-caliber board placement service. I asked the nonprofits, what else do I need to know? And they said, these folks need to be trained. And thus began the beginning of a board training and placement service that became very robust. We trained and placed over 1,000 corporate executives on 300 nonprofit boards. Most of them rose to board leadership positions. And then Carnegie and Mott Foundations funded me to replicate it in other cities, which became the beginnings of many of the programs around the country. And ultimately, I returned to New York, and I do this on my own, work with global corporations, training and placing their executives on boards. And it also ultimately led to my doing board consulting to help strengthen boards, help them advance from where they are to higher levels of performance, and that with global, national, and regional boards.
That's really interesting. It's so interesting that they approached you and saw a fit there. And did they approach you just because of philanthropic reasons? They felt that they could be of service? What was their motivation?
I think the sense was, and it really leads right into corporate social responsibility. So this is in the early 90s, and companies, the trend at that point was just beginning to turn, just beginning, from companies giving their philanthropic dollars fairly, it was, I would say, not that strategic. And the tide was beginning to turn, and actually as part of the organization that I established, what we offered as well was to help companies to integrate their philanthropy with volunteerism and board service, and to align their philanthropy and service with corporate mission and purpose. What is the company trying to accomplish? And even to start branding their corporate social responsibility with the company. And ultimately that led to my consulting practice along those lines as well. And what's really thrilling is to see a tremendous growth and development in this field worldwide with companies, and I think it accelerated since the fall of 2008, with companies being very, very conscious of the dollars and the service time that they spend investing in the nonprofit sector and being very purposeful about the issues they focus their attention on and how they, as I said, invest their time and money for results in making the world a better place and leveraging their time and money to galvanize others, including their customers and employees and all the other resources they can, to really affect good changes in the world, whether their issues are poverty or water or social justice or cultural arts. And I think it's very, very exciting. And I think it means that the causes that companies and people get engaged with, people are much more passionate, excited, invested, caring, and it's all to the greater good.
You know, when we talk about corporate social responsibility or a company's social mission, we don't often think of executives within that company serving on nonprofit boards and that being a component of it. So, and you're talking about tying that to philanthropy and branding it, which is really interesting. But what would be a reason to, if I'm running a company, what benefits do I get of sending my executives to these nonprofit board positions? And well, after that, I'll follow up.
I'm so excited you asked that because this is, to me, such a compelling piece of the puzzle for corporate engagement. It's a powerful win-win-win when a company encourages and supports its executives to serve on nonprofit boards. And by that I mean, by the way, the executives who want to serve on nonprofit boards, and I find there's a tremendous interest among many people. For the company, it's a way to facilitate and support leadership development among the executives. There is no better leadership development experience than serving on a nonprofit board. You become part of a team of peers that are virtually responsible with the CEO of a nonprofit, if the matching is done well, you become part of a nonprofit of a cause that you really care about, and you become part of a team of peers on that board with the CEO, whose role literally is to help envision the greater potential of that nonprofit and ensure that there is a good strategy, business plan, and revenue model to help this organization be as effective as possible in advancing a cause that you really believe in, whether it's poverty, social justice, economic development, environment, whether it's global or in your local community. And I see people so turned on, so involved. So if you're at your company and you're in middle or high management, you're still not seeing the whole company from above in terms of its the overall picture. But when you're on a board, you're there looking at the big picture, and you're responsible for its success as an organization. So, again, there's no greater leadership. You can't learn that in a classroom. So you're gaining that experience. You also, people find this experience incredibly rewarding. To be able to look back 3 years after you join a board and say, oh, my gosh, I helped this community I helped people in this underserved community. I helped students to get to college. I helped people to be able to reduce their debt, save money, and buy homes. I helped, you know, advance a variety of causes that you care about that are meaningful to you. So the individuals grow, develop, love it. And for the community, to be able to have people of the talent and expertise in strategic planning and accounting and finance and public relations and organizational development, the kind of talent that can be accessed from companies and involved on these boards who desperately, eagerly absorb this talent is just extraordinary. Not to mention that folks from companies can contribute funds. Often companies match it. And often the folks that I involve on boards are, get excited and bring friends, get their friends involved in volunteering and contributing money, which all goes to the greater good. And if you're excited about a cause, you're happy to give some money and to ask people for money too. So it's just such a win-win, and it strengthens the community.
So now that we understand those benefits, how would a company go about I don't want to get into the details of setting up a program like this, but how would they then connect that to philanthropic giving and to some of their other initiatives around social mission and social responsibility?
So, you know, as I mentioned, 15 years ago, corporate giving was pretty willy-nilly, and volunteering was often done by little groups of people here and there at a company. But that didn't capture the full potential and full impact. And today, the more forward-thinking companies are becoming more strategic about that and seeing it as a huge opportunity to strengthen communities, to impress customers, clients, and make their employees feel really good about the company. And I would say, too, the younger generations of employees are wanting and expecting their employers. They will choose and prefer and stay with employers that are involved in their communities. And when you integrate your philanthropy as a company and volunteerism and board service, that's a powerful combination. And it does take strategy, and it works best when the highest level, when the CEO and the executive offices are involved and supportive of what employees are interested in as well. And when you can tie it to brand and be thoughtful about it, and there are some really good company examples of this, and I write about them on my blog post. It's fun to look for examples of companies that are doing this well. So it does take some thought, but on the company's part, but I think there are tremendous rewards for the companies that do this.
Mm-hmm. So, and when you talk about integrating the volunteer with nonprofit services with philanthropic giving, does that mean within a community sending your executives to a couple of nonprofit boards and then matching your philanthropic contributions to those organizations and having larger employee volunteer programs around those organizations? Is that the best way that you found to build a kind of a comprehensive program in this area?
Yes, I think there are two things. One is I think employees who want to volunteer, which is many, is to be supportive and encouraging by saying, first of all, if you volunteer somewhere, we'll be supportive by contributing some amount of dollars, and for each company to say, decide how much they have and want to contribute philanthropically and come up with some kind of policy. And so to have what's called a matching gift program, matching what employees give and giving contributions where they volunteer, and for where their people serve on boards to having a matching program. And more companies are adopting it. So it speaks to the employees, it speaks to the community that we're supportive and we match it and we care. And then the other is to maybe choose, in addition, a theme so that I'm trying to think of examples. It could be a printing company, a book publisher that would invest in financial fitness or literacy programs so that ties in. So they might have some signature projects that relate to the work of the company and that there's an association of the brand, or they might have a particular campaign related to public libraries and access to the broader community. I just did some work with Aveda, and mm-hmm. they source natural ingredients for their makeup and shampoos and their products from around the world, from indigenous communities, and at the same time, they then invest in helping indigenous communities with their goals and objectives in terms of protecting their identities and, in some cases, securing land and securing and protecting land rights. So I have a couple of posts on these kinds of matters. And what happens as a result is environmental sustainability, which is good for the whole world, protecting some of the indigenous communities that are in danger of being lost, but also at the same time the company gets access to some natural ingredients for their products. So, again, a win-win-win. And also customers appreciate this, so it's a branding opportunity for them. So companies are more and more, and I think they're finding it's very good for public relations, as well as their employees appreciating it, looking at issues they can support that people can then identify with their company as a do-good thing. But at the same time, a key is also supporting employees and executives who serve on boards in pursuing interests that they are personally enthusiastic about.
Okay, right. Could you share, you know, a little bit more about what you did with Aveda or an example of another company? I'd like to kind of paint a picture for our listeners about some of these strategic initiatives that you've been talking about.
Let's see. One that I've written about and get excited about is Maria Eitel at Nike. A few years ago, was looking at what kind of issue could Nike support and get behind that would be powerful and meaningful, and did a lot of research. And some companies, I know some companies actually, I believe they did as well, have worked with the International Center for Research on Women, which is in Washington. So they're a think tank research organization that works with corporations to do some of the background research. I believe Nike did, but I know other companies have for sure. And in Maria Eitel's research in the foundation, what they discovered and realized is that a key to addressing global poverty, especially in developing countries, is investing in girls. And there's actually this wonderful little YouTube clip that you can find that's called Girls, and you can certainly find it on the Nike site, and you can find it on my one of my blog posts on Nike. And what they found is that girls in developing countries become pregnant very young, and so they don't gain an education. They're not able to contribute to the agricultural farming, to the economic development of their communities, and the cycle of poverty is continuing. So if they could change that part of the equation by helping girls to advance their education, postpone pregnancy, they could change the whole dynamic in a community, and which would ultimately lead to stronger economies, healthier families, more successful families, and that the key to this equation was working with the girls, helping the girls. And Nike, I believe, began this, and ultimately the World Bank, Goldman Sachs, others invested in this. And I attend the Clinton Global Initiative each year. This project went from a small project to a centerpiece project at the Clinton Global Initiative last fall. And so Nike leveraged their research and support as a company to a very broad group of powerful institutions supporting it, and its impact has been tremendous. So that's just one story.
Why do you think Nike chose to support that? I mean, it seems not closely connected to their brand and our, you know, perception of athleticism and a more even testosterone-driven brand.
So you're saying it doesn't seem like an obvious link to their product.
Right.
I can't speak for them, so I don't know. But I think in my mind there's a girl power connection in terms of sports, and I think they were looking for an issue that would really be a greater good for the world issue, and that would be identified with Nike. And there's no question that the girl issue has become a powerful centerpiece for addressing global poverty, and it's highly associated with Nike, and that they have been able to galvanize tremendous support from major global institutions around their work.
So Alice, I read something today, and it was in CSR Wires, an article asking the question, what's the legal responsibility of corporate directors when it comes to sustainability? And before you and I started this interview, we were talking about how if you're sitting on a board for a for-profit company, you're really responsible to the shareholders of that company. But now if we talk about involving social programs and a social mission and corporate social responsibility in for-profit companies, I would love to get your thoughts and your experience on how to balance the, you know, board of directors' responsibility to its shareholders with kind of a greater responsibility to another set of stakeholders or to the community at large.
Wonderful. Olivia, let me just ask you, there was a beep click on my phone in the first part of the question when you said you read something today. I just want to make sure I heard the first part of the question.
Sure. I read it on CSR Wire, and it was an article asking what's the legal responsibility of corporate directors when it comes to sustainability.
Okay. Sustainability relating to the world, to communities?
You know, it didn't.
Okay. So you're asking about the balance of the responsibility to shareholders and profits, and as balance to responsibility to the community and the world.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested in the idea of business having a larger set of stakeholders that it can please. But I want to make sure that before I go out and start arguing this with everyone, that I want to get the benefit of your experience. Is this even kind of legal or ethical if you're sitting on a board of directors for a company? Is that really your primary responsibility?
So this is an age-old argument, and there are people who would argue on both sides. Some saying that the board's responsibility of a for-profit corporation is strictly profits for the shareholders. But I think a much more contemporary view of that is that a company as part of this world also, and therefore the board of directors, also has a responsibility to the world it lives in. And I think the reality is that in today's times, shareholders, while they want to invest in companies that will generate a profit for them, I think shareholders and employees who will more likely invest in a company that they believe is a good citizen. And that's got to be a factor for boards of directors to consider as well. And with transparency and expectations of institutions and just citizens of the world, I think companies need to be attentive to that and are attentive to that. The Aveda example is a really good example that while it's a wonderful story, that Aveda is collaborative with the communities where it sources raw materials, and they're very forward-thinking, and they've been functioning that way actually for 3 decades since the company began, so that's very progressive. I would say also that's a good example, but even if you think about human rights issues for other companies, and how they work with child labor, et cetera, I think the expectation on behalf of investors and shareholders is shifting so that our tolerance for companies that don't treat laborers and don't treat people of the world appropriately is really low, is lowering. We expect companies to behave appropriately. So, and in terms of how they treat the environment. So I think this is becoming an expectation, and it's a factor that boards of directors are going to have to keep in mind. And I think there are enough monitoring organizations, Transparency International, and their work with Siemens, was it a year or two ago, in terms of corruption. That was big news, and I think it's become intolerable, unacceptable, shameful, and the public doesn't tolerate it anymore, and there are enough watchdog groups that we're going to see companies doing the right thing because they have to.
When you're working with these types of for-profit boards, are you having to go in and make the case to members of the board about the benefits of being a socially responsible company, or and do you have to educate them on what that means and how to do it? I mean, what's kind of the pulse from your vantage point now about the willingness of board members to embrace this type of business and their level of knowledge about it?
At this point, the companies that I work with who seek my assistance with corporate social responsibility are the ones who seek me out for my guidance and assistance. So I'm not in a position of selling this to companies who don't want this. Mm-hmm. What is fun is that compared to 15 years ago, it's become a bandwagon of interest instead of it being so, so rare for a company to want to engage in corporate social responsibility or corporate citizenship. Instead of it being so rare, it's becoming more and more commonplace. And I think that will just continue to grow, again, because of expectations of the public and because the companies that are engaging in CSR are finding it highly rewarding. And there are more and more studies that show that it's beneficial for the companies.
So I know we don't have too much more time, but one of the areas that you've done a lot of work in and that's really vital is to measure the impact of these types of programs and, you know, speaking loosely, corporate social responsibility programs, and you've developed some ways to measure this. How do you work with companies to measure their impact? I think that when we think, oh, we've got to set up this perfect program and we've got to execute it and what, then we have to measure it, it sounds a bit daunting, and sometimes we're not even sure why we really need to measure it if we're doing good through our own, you know, through the program itself.
Right. Well, companies are accustomed to measuring everything they do, and I don't think companies take anything seriously unless they measure it. And it's been my concern since I began in this field in the early 90s that if companies don't measure it, it will simply become a flash in the pan. And I'm glad to see that the trend is towards tracking and measurement, which is just second nature at any company. And some of the measurement is just counting. It's just dollars that are being contributed and where, people that are volunteering and where. So it's just tracking and monitoring. Some of it's satisfaction surveys, comparing employee satisfaction, those who are volunteering, those who are not, how much this means to people who are applying for jobs. Is this relevant to them? And the trends are absolutely that the younger generations are much more interested in employers where service and philanthropy are part of it. Then the harder part of measuring is the impact in the community, and because that involves measuring through and with the nonprofits. But this absolutely can be done as well. And I think we're getting more sophisticated about how we do that. some things are easier to measure, some things are harder. But there are absolutely ways to connect the dots in saying, okay, of the nonprofits that we're helping, what's the impact they're having, and what's the part that we've done as a company that is helping to advance this nonprofit in advancing the community and the causes we support. And I think that's very important for the company to know the value of what they're investing in, and for the employees to know, wow, this is what we contributed to doing, and for shareholders to know, for constituents to know. And again, if it's not measured, no one's going to take it seriously, and it's not an investment that the company will continue. This is just how business has always been done, and I think it will become more and more comfortable, more and more natural. It's moving in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think that part of it is also where, and I think you had written about this, but it's, we're used to having certain things evaluated by, I guess, the market. So we're used to everything, you know, we're evaluating our financial impact and our financial progress, but now there's more willingness and accountability to evaluate and to hold companies in a good or poor light for their social and environmental impact. And so it's not just, you know, the financial bottom line. Of course, we're starting to talk about these other bottom lines, but that's having more of a public presence and a market presence.
Exactly. And to your point too, it might not always be an easy number. Oh, we accomplished 23. it's a little bit of a harder story to tell, but it can be told. It can be assessed, and it can be told.
Right, and like you said, I mean, it seems that because it's relatively new, it can't help but get easier and more natural for companies and for everyone to relate to what these measurements mean.
Exactly.
So, Alice, I want to ask you, so let's say that I've got some people listening who are now convinced that they should put some of their employees who are interested on nonprofit boards. How do you find nonprofits who want to take you in and who want your expertise? How do you connect with them? And what is the expertise level or age level that nonprofits look for?
The vast majority of boards desperately want people from businesses. It might be surprising to people how eager nonprofits are for people with business skills and experience. In terms of you asked about the age and level of experience,
mm-hmm.
and how to find them. So the Lester Salomon is the resource for the numbers of nonprofits, and I'm trying to remember. It usually rolls off the top of my tongue, but I'm afraid of my numbers right now. But there are vast numbers of nonprofits in every community, and the majority of nonprofits have budget sizes of under $10 million. 96% of nonprofits have budget sizes of under $10 million. And those are the nonprofits. Actually, there was an article in the New York Times Saturday that it costs millions of dollars to be on a nonprofit board. They were talking about cultural arts institutions, but that would be the case across education and hospitals, others as well. But those are only the top 4% of nonprofits. So the vast majority are thrilled to have people with business experience and whose contributions could be $2,500 to $10,000. And I know that's not a little bit of money, but for people who work in business and who have some experience, it's their expertise and some contribution, which is often matched by business employers, that can be helpful. The sweet spot in age range is probably like 35 to 45 years old. Finding the right board is not so easy, because the key is, certainly you want to pick an issue you care about, but I find most people care about a number of issues. The key is finding a board where you can add value, and that depends on what's going on at the board in terms of their strategic issues and what's going on and what you bring to bear. So it does help if someone who knows the nonprofit sector in your community or at the national or global level, depending on what you're looking at, can help be a guide. Some companies now, their philanthropy offices are doing some matchmaking. In some communities, there are, in New York, it's called Board Serve New York at United Way. They provide a service that helps with that. In a variety of communities, they have services that help with it. There are online matching services, but my concern with those is there's not enough information for candidates to know what they're getting into. So if you do use that, you should also go meet with the nonprofit, with the executive director, and really make sure you find out what you're getting into in terms of what's going on and what the challenges are. It's only a matter of eyes wide open. Every organization has challenges. Just know what you're getting into. And do look up the organization on GuideStar.com to look up their financial information. So that, and learn as much as you can about the organizations through whatever sources you can, so that you know what will be expected of you.
And it's the process to, if you don't have some type of matching agency or liaison in the community, and you've done your research and you feel that it might be a fit, your skills and your interest level in a board, is it just okay to reach out to them and just to have an exploratory conversation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Most boards, if you've got business experience and expertise, if you're willing to make some kind of contribution, and it's one of the questions you would ask is what would be your expectation in terms of it's called the give-get, what I give and what I raise. Many organizations would be thrilled, and it's the executive director to reach out to have people with the right background to join the board. I'm not saying everyone that you would get in touch with would, but many would be.
Sure.
So it would definitely be worth sending an email with your resume and say, your organization looks very interesting to me. I might be interested in getting involved. Is this something we could talk about?
One of the things that's really interesting to me about businesses and with a social mission is that this crossover between business and cause, but there's a lot of partnerships that happen between for-profit, non-profit, and hybrid organizations, and I think that those are just becoming more common. And you've given us a whole new way to look at this. And, you know, before I became familiar with your work, it hadn't seemed to me that nonprofit board service or leadership was really even an element of social mission and corporate social responsibility. So it's really interesting, Alice, and it's just another way for us to create and form these partnerships and just reallocate all of our resources and our skills to benefit, as you say, all the parties.
Well, I'm glad. I think it's a very exciting era, and I think that the generations in their 20s and 30s are contributing mightily to this advancement because this is something that they expect from companies and employers and are contributing to tremendously.
Thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything else that you want to share before we let you go?
Thank you so much, Olivia, and I'm excited if any of our listeners or readers are inspired by this to add more to good causes.
Great, and I'll put links, of course, to your columns on Fast Company, which are really interesting, and I guess those are a weekly column, right?
Yeah, once to twice a week, depending on the inspiration.
Terrific. Alice, thank you again.
Thank you, Olivia.
For more interviews about Cause Capitalism, visit causecapitalism.com.